It's the cycle of life. No, it's the news. According to me.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was all about. It sounded more heavy. It sounded heavier than it really is. Oh, it is a glorious Thursday, June 12th, 7 o'clock, 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. A little earlier than normal, it seems like. I usually make it by like 7:30 usually. Little doggies got me up a little earlier this morning. And all went well. We got the other dog that was, our little sick dog was a problem. Welcome aboard. It is the news according to me, of course. Not according to you, but it is according to me. However, you can call in the show. There's a hotline. It's hot. You can call and leave a message or a text message if you want to. You can call. It's 812-379-8778. 8778. You can, if you don't have a, if you're from another country, or if you just don't have a cell phone, or if you're from California, you can call in or leave a message, a text message via google.com/voice, voice, V-O-I-C-E, slash voice. And you'll be able to type that number in, 812-379-8778. If you want to leave a message, I'd love to hear what you have to say, but your opinions, comments, questions, thoughts about what you want want me to address on the show. A couple things I want to talk about today. One is just what's going on with of course the LA riot stuff and all the National Guard thing. The other thing is I want you to notice, and this is something where you have to take a step back and kind of pay attention sometimes by getting the larger view of what's going on. So why don't I take a step back and I take a larger view? I'm way back here. I'm way far away over here, looking back at it, looking over the top of all this stuff. I can see my cup. And what I have in my cup here is chai with no creamer, because I didn't realize I had no more creamer. I knew I was at the end of my Almond Joy creamer, but I didn't know that there was no more creamer out there in the refrigerator. I thought I could have sworn there was some out there, but no, there's none out there. And so I am creamerless. I put in some, I have some whole milk I put in there. Now the good news is, and the reason it's, well, one of the reasons it's a glorious day is I have a freshly brewed, properly aged batch of sweet peach tea that I make. It actually has peaches in it. In fact, there's two little bitty slices, small slices of peach in my glass right now, with just the right amount of ice. And I made it last night or yesterday evening. Of course, the trick. Normally, the tea is fine just after I make it. However, putting the peaches in there, it takes a little bit of time for the peaches to permeate the tea, get the flavoring all around. It's best when the peaches actually float when you first put them in. Those are the best peaches, and that's what was working on this one. And of course, as the peaches age and can continue to ripen, which they do in the tea, they continue to off-put flavoring. Oh yeah, it's good. That's just good stuff. It's just good. It's just got a little bit of a peach flavor to the tea. It's not overwhelming. It's just like natural, real peach. That's the good stuff. Now, by tonight and through tomorrow, even into Saturday, it'll probably still be good because of the way I keep it. But it'd be even better if I kept it in glass. I have a plastic pitcher that's pretty high quality, but if you have a glass pitcher, it actually keeps, which works better in any kind of food product that you keep in glass is much more, you can tell a difference in the way it's kept. We buy milk in glass containers because it's, I can tell a huge difference. And I still drink whole milk. That's what I put in my cereal. That's what I drink when I'm eating cookies or whatever. So I'm still just a big kid. But the day the doctor tells me that I can't eat any more dairy, I'm just going to go ahead and dig my hole. That's what my backhoe is for. I'm going to jump in and have somebody, I'm going to somehow set it up so I can automate the process of just covering me up. Because it's just, I'll be done. That's what, you know, why I even leave. What, you know, cheese is the best part of my day. Well, other than the sweet tea, but I eat cheese with sweet tea. You gotta have a way to wash that stuff down. So that's good stuff. I'm calling the sweet tea this morning my primary cup because this chai is just not. I mean, it's good and it's hot, but it's just not, you know. Oh, goodness gracious. We have, I want you to take a step back and notice something about the news cycle. What was it we were all, you know, throwing our hands up in the air, clutching our pearls, grabbing your chest, your throat, your around your neck there. Oh my goodness. It was different 2 weeks ago, a week ago, 2 weeks ago. It was all about the bill. It was all about Elon Musk and everything was going on with Elon. You know, now everybody's, you say Elon Musk, and we're going, what about him? What? It was 2 weeks ago, it was all about that. 2 weeks before that, it was all about how evil Elon Musk was and how much we were living in an oligarchy and everything was, Elon Musk was running the White House. 2 weeks before that, it was just all about Trump being a dictator and whatever, you know, it's just one thing after. I'm going to start taking note of once a week, probably every Monday, just to see what the actual topic is, the news cycle buzzword, the political football of the week is. Because it's never ending, and the news cycle drives this stuff. And guess what? If you went a month without listening to the news, now you wouldn't want to, you still want to listen to me, but without listening to any news other than me, because you have to listen to me. Because, you know, it's your, everybody's got to have a vice. So the news cycle, if you drop out of it for a month, it will affect your life in so many ways. And here's the first one. You'll have more time in your day. You won't be as flipped out about what's going on in the world. So yeah, I would say, you know, if you want to have better mental health, just drop out of the news cycle for a while. See how it affects your life. Because all the stuff that's going on out there really has very little effect on how you go about your day-to-day business. Very little effect. Some of the big bills that are passed and all this stuff that happens, occasionally there's a ripple that comes through and says, oh, today you can do this and yesterday you couldn't. Oh, okay. That always cracks me up about rules. Working in the aviation industry, and this would happen all the time, and I think this is something that we find even in our, the bigger government gets and the more intrusive government gets, of course, the more important they're, the more effect their decisions have on us, which it shouldn't be that way. But what ends up happening is this, when I was in aviation back in the day, the thing that always cracked me up, the thing that I noticed back in the early 2000s, in the airline industry especially, they don't have all these rules. You have your, the operations manual. You have your, all these different manuals that you have that tell you how to do every little thing. Every little thing. You want to find out how to turn the knob on a particular piece of equipment. It's
This is where you take your fingers and you put it on the knob and then you turn it this way. It does this and turns it. And if this happens, if a mouse falls out of the overhead bin, this is how you handle it. And here's the paperwork for that. There's just everything's, you know, been thought of. If it hasn't been thought of, there's that's already been thought of because there's a place for things that haven't been thought of. But the crazy thing about this is, well, we have all these checklists, of course, and flows and the way we do things, procedures, SO. Standardization is a big deal. To the point where, if you're not standardized, it can lead to accidents. It literally does. And it's been proven time and time again, because you're flying with different people all the time. What's happening up in the cockpit, up in the flight deck? And the what happens is you fly with somebody different, and all of a sudden they have a different checklist, or they have a different way of doing something. You don't do that. It's just because you need to have consistency because you don't know what the person's going to do next. So they would change things occasionally, and of course, if you didn't comply, somebody's going to die. That's the way they would act. So they have this little procedure, maybe it's a shutdown checklist where you do this, this, and this, and then leaving the aircraft, you do this, this, and this, and you flip all these switches and make sure this is all in place. So you get in, you do your thing, you get done, and all of a sudden you find out that they've changed something on the checklist. We're now doing it this way instead of that way. And when you ask somebody, hey, why did we switch this over to this doing it this way? Well, because it's been determined that this is usually they just make something up. They don't usually give you an answer. Oh, well, it's because this is the way so-and-so does it. Whatever. It's just whatever the reason is. They don't even have to give you a reason. They can just change stuff. So you're telling me last week if I'd have done it this way, you would have failed me. You would have said we were all going to die. This week, if I do it the old way, you're going to fail me, and we're all going to die. And this is, when you're doing check rides and stuff. And then they'll change it back, 6 months later. They're constantly going back and forth with all this stuff. And of course, there's always these people, even in the training department. There are people who disagree with the way something is done. Well, are we going to do this before we do that, or do we have to do this so we can do that? I don't care. Just do it the old way. Just do it that way. Don't tell anybody I told you that. I just kind of until they finally figure out that it's causing more confusion. And this is the thing: the change should not just be done for the sake of change. You better have a reason for why we're doing it that way, and why we're changing it. Because you're going to get some people in the process that are going to not know that change happened. It's just inevitably going to happen. I've been out on the line working. When you're working 5 days and you're off for three, when you first start in the airlines, typically you're on reserve for a while. You're a reserve pilot. And they get beat up like crazy. It is ridiculous how they beat, in most reserves. Sometimes there's an over, especially for first officers, not such a big deal. Captain's a big deal. You get beat up as a captain because there are fewer captains than there are typically. It's easier to hire first officers because that's their entry level. They have to get certain qualifications before they can move up to captain. So once you're in that captain position, you're getting beat up, especially on reserve. And typically you're on for 5 days, off for three. That's different than a normal line pilot who's usually got a 3 or 4 day trip, and they're off for 3 or 4 days. So it's a very different world. Because at the end of that 5 days, you are beaten. Sometimes they can move you into 6 days if they need you for that. But they or operationally just get stuck somewhere. The sad part of that is after the fifth day, you're wiped out. You're just done. So the first day off, you don't want to do anything. You've been stressed out with all the travel, everything has happened, you're going. You've been living out of hotels, whatever. You've been, working both sides of the clock. You're just done after 5 days. There's a reason why we only work so many days. And then you have that first day off, and you're wiped out. You can't really accomplish much of anything, or it's not healthy. Sometimes you run right into doing something else. You have to go to a wedding, whatever happens there. You got to do something, and you got to you know, you got responsibilities, but it's that just wears you out even more. And it's tough. I was on one of these stretches one time and I ended up, like the day was day, like day three or day four or something. So, and something had changed and I didn't catch it. It was, I don't even think they put out, I'm not even sure what they put out to talk about it, but I put out these little announcements, like, oh, we used to call them PIFs at the one company, PIF. I don't know what they call them. Other companies call them different things. HI6 or whatever priority, all different kinds of things they put out there. And rolling down the runway, and this guy, he's rattling off these different call-outs as we're rolling down the runway. And I thought, why are you throwing that in there? And what's that all about? I didn't say anything at the time. We just, you know, you keep going. Get up above 10,000. And I realized they made a change. They're adding things to our call-outs. I had no idea. I've been working 12 hours a day, 13 hours a day. Just, you know, crashing at the end of the day. You know, just... So it's just one of those things. It's just it happens. Of course, those changes didn't affect anything. We still fly the plane the same way. Still do everything the same way, other than these crazy callouts. But you know, I could have thought he said something else. He might have said, you know, airspeed alive, and I thought, well, it's who's alive? What's alive? Live spider? What'd you say? What live? There's a bumblebee? What? Because it's not a normal callout. You're not expecting that to happen there. I misunderstand the guy and think, oh, we're supposed to abort the takeoff. Oh, we're supposed to, you know, run it off into the ditch. I don't know. You never know what the guy said. I don't know. So it's kind of one of those situations. And this, I find this to be the case with a lot of legislation, a lot of things that happen politically in our country. They change stuff all the time. But they really don't affect your life at all. They don't affect the way that, you know, it doesn't affect the way the airplane flies. Still uses the same principles. Physics are still involved. But this is the kind of thing that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. Is that this news cycle thing changes, and it kind of tends to drive our psyche. And you have to kind of take a step back from that. Now, some people can. Some people can disconnect. And I think I'm one of those people. I found that if I talk about politics and talk about the negative side of things very much, if I can really go negative on politics. On what's happening with our country, the cancer that is the bureaucracy and the underbelly and the what some people call the deep state, the bureaucrats, the technocrats, everybody that's behind the scenes that aren't they're not elected officials. And of course, the Democrats don't have any problem with those people. Head of the FBI, he's not an elected official. Well, he's approved by the Senate. But everybody working for the FBI doesn't stand before the Senate, get checked out. They all have access to all your personal information. Certainly the IRS does. This is the kind of thing that, you know, well, this person got in there and didn't have, you know, they weren't elected. I'd say 99% of the people who work in the government, work for the government, they're not elected. People who work for the Postal Department, post office folks, United States Postal Service, they elected? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they're government employees. Pretty sure it's a government job. But there's a whole lot of them. There's probably more of them in your city than there are elected officials in your city. People that work at the Water and Sewer Department. Is that a government job? People who work at the Capitol building, just whatever it is that, you know, this for every elected person there is, there's, you know, at least 10. They're unelected, at least 10, probably more than that. Just, you know, probably 100, 90, probably 99. As I was saying, there's 99. It's just the rhetoric continues. And this is what we're finding, I think, what we're seeing anyway, in California right now. Of course, it's the topic of the day. It's the political football of the week. And if you don't have the grounding of understanding that, it's just I think people, we have to talk about something positive. Well, it's no, you have to be able to understand how to engage with something negative and then walk away from it. There's two different things there. And most normal human beings have that have the ability to do that. That you can, and you can kind of teach yourself to do that. You can kind of I think by engaging in it and then disengage, just learning how to disengage, I think is part of it. People of faith have a tendency to be able to do that better than others because they can leave it in God's hands. It's one of those things where you can work through this tough thing. You can think through this very tough situation and call it what it is, and realize at the end of the day, my faith is not built on these people doing crazy things in the Capitol. It's just, and they have very little effect on my actual life. Now they do have an effect. Now this is like I was saying, there are those ripple effects that happen. There are those things that, occasionally it affects one or two people, or the population in general doesn't affect that much. There are those, four or five things a year that they do that make a big difference. Now this president and this administration is doing things that have a greater effect, in my opinion, on the working class of this nation, the 100 million people who actually work, for a living, who are employed. And I think that that includes business owners as well, especially business owners, that there's a big push for small business. If you're own small business right now, it's in general, there are some small businesses that have been affected adversely by some things that the administration has done. Very few, and most of those are recoverable. Because this is really the typical middle class, working class president, in my opinion. he has done more for the, of course, they always say is, oh, he's just giving his billionaire friends all these tax breaks. And he's taking your Medicare away to pay for it. That's what they're saying. Of course, that was one of the political footballs of the week, was the whole Medicare, Medicaid thing, that Doge was taking all that away. And that's the kind of stuff that we deal with these crazy wackos. Because anything that Trump does, of course, is going to, now they're blaming Trump for inflaming the riots riots that are going on. Now he's increasing the escalating the issue by sending a National Guard. Now they're just going in there and standing around. They're not doing anything. They're just standing around. Well, they're mere presence. Have you ever seen a bouncer in a bar? You think he's supposed to be? If the bouncer in the bar is intimidating enough, you have no problems in the bar. No issues. Because that guy back there, he's gonna come out. Once he comes out from behind the bar, or once he's standing behind you. Your next step is out the door. Any kind of security situation. This is where back in the day when Bruce Lee was considered to be invincible because of movies, but he was an excellent fighter. A lot of respect for the man. He was an actor first and a martial artist second. I know there will be a lot of people who will disagree with me on that. But if you ever read his books, if you ever read some of his stuff, he was a huge martial artist. Don't get me wrong; he was a proficient and competent martial artist. He just developed his own style of martial art that is functional, still going today. There's still schools that teach it. Now, having said that, he also was an actor. He was an actor before he was a martial artist. He took his martial arts to the stage. That was his character. That was his thing. Very good at it. And he understood presentation. He understood the whole thing of camera angles and everything that made it dramatic. Very good at that. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying it doesn't belittle his martial arts ability whatsoever. He was a phenomenal martial artist. He was also, I would say, even a better actor than he was a martial artist. Now, not in English. He couldn't speak English very well. But as far as Chinese go, I mean, he was doing a movie in Mandarin, pretty phenomenal for that age, for that day and age. Now, if you're walking down the street with Bruce Lee, nobody knew it was Bruce Lee, would you feel safer? You think he would be picked? He was a little guy, by the way, about 155 pounds. Walking down the street with him, and nobody knew anything about him. Nobody knew it was Bruce Lee. Today, there's kids that don't even know who Bruce Lee was. And the, you know, you're walking down the street with that guy. Do you think anybody's going to pick on you? Probably. Now, if you're walking through a bad area, you're going to get picked on. If you're walking through the neighborhood with a guy who is 6'8", 280 pounds, solid wall of muscle, and, you know, has, you know, especially if he's wearing a uniform, walking, you know, next to that guy, you think anybody's going to mess with you? People are going to be intimidated. They won't even ask you what time of day it is. Which, by the way, is one of the tricks that a lot of people will do. They'll ask you, hey, you got the time? When you go to, when you're distracted, you go to look at your watch or you go to... That's why I always kind of know what... Whenever I see anybody approaching me or I'm around a lot of people, I like to look at the time, see what time it is. If anybody asks me, I'll just flat out tell them. If I don't know, I'll make it up. I'm not looking at anything else. I'm watching you, buddy. Hey, you got the time? Yeah, 7:10. It's high noon. It's lunchtime. Or I'll just say, it's lunchtime. What time is it? It's lunchtime. Supper time. Like, whatever. You don't take your eyes off of them because as soon as you do, that's when they jump you. That's a big trick. Knowing in a lot of people who will mug you or who will try to pull something on you, they want to see what kind of watch you're wearing. Or you pull out your phone and you snatch it. Just all kinds of tricks like that people do because they can't afford to, you know, they can't, don't have the moral fortitude to go out and get their own job. They work pretty hard at taking your money, but they can't, you know, just go out and make any money and be productive. So the idea here is that you present a show of force that is so big that they just don't screw around anymore. Now, the other side of this whole thing is, this has always been the case, these riots, these protests, everything that happens. Of course, there's always an organization behind them. Now, BLM was not actually behind the protests back in the George Floyd days, back in the 2021, was it 2020? 2020, I guess it was. BLM was not behind those riots, by the way. There were other people behind. They were behind the protests. But what slips in there is this whole, now it was Acorn, it was... what is it? What was it? The CL? What is it? CIAU? Whatever it was. There's always been big organizations behind this stuff. Now, Acorn was not a big organization when it started. It was an NGO. It was a non-government organization, and it was somewhat a popular organization. It was able to, under whoever was leading it, I can't remember who was leading Acorn for a while. They became a very large organization, a very large NGO, and a lot of other NGOs kind of fed off of them. Well, the larger you get, the more possible it is for someone to catch you, because you're much more visible. It's harder to hide an organization that's huge like that. They got involved with everything, but they were mostly involved with. The anti-life group, pro-abortion group, and because of that, they were big into protests of that nature. But they were doing all kinds of things. Of course, this is back when that was one of the biggest issues. Immigration wasn't as big of an issue as it is today. Boy, that's good tea. We have. All this, the situations with, you just pick a topic and they'll riot over it. Now, the problem is behind the scenes, they use these protests as opportunities to create chaos. They make it sound like, well, it's just anarchists or whatever it is that's out there. And this is not really the issue. The issue is, what are they? Why are they trying to disrupt things? Now, if you've read Rules for Radicals, you understand that overwhelming the system, which is what they, it's one of their tactics. They also want to create chaos, create this illusion that things are out of control and we need somebody to step in and take control. But it can't be, you know, can't be the National Guard. That if the government, if the current government does step in, they're fascists, they're dictators, call them all these names. They're stepping in and they're the problem. They're the reason we have to fight back against the man. At the end of the day, what steps in is the Communist Party, the Marxist Communist philosophy. You end up with a Stalinist style government. They always come in with the term socialism. Always comes with the socialist, like the National Workers Socialist regime, which was the Nazis. This is how they do this. This is the way they overthrow governments is by destabilizing the current government and turning public opinion against the current government. Next thing you know, well, the people need to be in charge. People are in charge. We have a system. We elect them. This particular president happens to be one that's not part of that establishment. So he's just doing what the people elected him to do. And they can't stand that because that's not the way you do things in Washington. You run on all this stuff. You make all these promises. And when you get into power, you have your personal agenda. And you do whatever's the highest bidder tells you with the highest lobbyist. Trump is not about that. Couldn't care less about the lobbyists. So here we are with this situation now with the they're blaming Trump again. Now San Antonio, for some reason, they were starting to, you know, there was an uprising down in San Antonio. By the way, San Antonio, Austin, those areas. Beautiful cities, beautiful areas, very, you know, the entertainment is great, the bands are great, all this stuff. However, it is a very left, they're very left-leaning in terms of the, even though they're in a red state, it's a red state, they are very much in a very left-leaning part of the state. There's always those pockets. Indiana even has a couple, a couple of counties that are very left-leaning. And because of that, you know, they're sending in the National Guard. The governor of the state, you know, federal government didn't have to do anything. The governor of the state decided we're going to mobilize the National Guard. Now, one of the things that the National Guard can do, and within the federal government can come in and deputize the National Guard. That takes a little bit more paperwork to get that done, but they can actually deputize the National Guard to make arrests. Normally, the rules of engagement are, you know, you can't even. You can't do anything, but you can't fire on anybody. But you can protect yourself. If you're fired upon, you can fire back, basically. But it's very, very, very touchy situation at that point. And I don't doubt that they will try to goad them into doing that. But their primary purpose in LA is to protect the federal workers, federal buildings. The president has absolute authority to do that. Regardless of what the governor thinks. And of course, the governor's standing there saying, like, oh, you're going to arrest me? Just arrest me. Go ahead and arrest me. And, you know, of course, the reason he's saying that, he came out and said that, this whole thing about, oh, just get it over with. Tom Homan wants to arrest me. Just come and get me. Just come get me. Just get it over. Just go ahead and arrest me. Well, of course, now the reason he's doing that is because Donald Trump was arrested. And of course, he became president. It's not going to work that way for Gavin Newsom. When you stand in the way and impede, when you break the law, blatantly break the law and impede law enforcement agencies from carrying out their business without any kind of just cause, they're not overstepping their business. You've broken the law. You're aiding and abetting. And it's, nobody's above the law. Gavin Newsom is hoping it keeps him in the news cycle, keeps him, you know, on the top of the popularity list. I think he recently came out, didn't he just come out with a book? Wasn't he doing something with a book? Or he's got a book coming out. I can't remember what it is, what it's all about, but he's got something going on. But these people are, they're incredulous. They continue to blame everybody else but themselves for everything that's going on. They can't ever take responsibility for themselves because that would be a grown-up thing to do. Gavin Newsom, he once in a while, he in a stupid little way, he'll step in something that he actually takes responsibility without realizing he just did. But see, one of the things he did recently was saying, "Well, just because President Xi is coming in to talk to me, that's the reason we cleaned up San Francisco or whatever, cleaned up the streets." Well, it's true because it's true. I wish I had that clip on. I should put that clip on a cart just to play it once in a while. It's true because it's true. So he admitted to it, which was probably the best thing for him to do, just to try to deny it and to flake off of it from. But at the same time, it's like, okay, so now you're saying the quiet part out loud, which is better. At least you're admitting that you're a phony, but you're still a phony. I get that. I have to have some respect for the guy for being at least honest about that. Nothing worse than a person who's not self-aware of those things. But in the same deal. So there we go. Folks, again, one of the other things that makes this day a glorious day, by the way, is last night I've been having this problem with I've got a Dodge Dakota. It's a 2004. I bought it and was brand new. I've had it since 2003. It is over 20 years old. Only has about 110,000 miles on it. Hasn't been driven all that much. However, it is a rust bucket. It has rust everywhere. I've got to deal with some of that. The bed rusted out. I put a flatbed on it. I've got to deal with some rust that's in the rocker panels. But it is, in general, it's a good running truck. It's the engine itself is solid so far. I'll say that with much trepidation, Andre. With all the car problems I've been having lately with other cars. But of course, the good news is the motorhome is back on the road, and it's literally on the road right now. I've loaned it to a friend. Got it all fixed and met multi-thousands of dollars later. Loaned it to a friend of mine, which is great. I'm glad it's being used. It just needs to be used. And so he's out buzzing around in that thing. And he took it on a short trip, which is fine. That way he can deal with anything that happens to it at this point. And the good news is it's back on the road. Everything's running. Pretty much everything's working the way it's supposed to. Mostly. There's a couple little issues. This one place I took it to get it worked on, very disappointing. Spent quite a bit of money, and everything that they looked at, they did do some rewiring on some things. They did clean up a few things. However, the way they left things, there were wires that were not, reconnected. They were connected, but they weren't re-zip tied to, tagged up to where they were supposed to be. One of them was laying on a part of an engine that got pretty hot and it started melting through the covering. There's like a chafing stuff that goes around the wiring and it started kind of melting through that a little bit. And it's like, I'm glad I caught that. So I went through everything. Of course, during that time I was looking through everything that I found the crack in the turbo, which they couldn't find. And the air conditioning, there's the chassis air conditioner, and of course there's the unit. There's two air conditioners in the unit that are in the front and the back. And it's when you're sitting parked, plugged in. And they also worked on the generator. The generator was having some issues. It would run for about 15 minutes and shut off. And I couldn't figure out what it was. It wasn't the oil. It wasn't the water. It was an issue. It just kept looking. Something was going on with it. But apparently there was a mechanism with it that needed to be refabricated. And so they got that fixed. Found the part. Got it fixed. So now it runs. It'll just run and run and run without all the issues of shutting off all the time. But problem is now, yesterday I tried to run the I have a feeling that something is going on. Now, of course, and the other thing is my house batteries, they charge when I have it plugged in to shore power, but it does not charge the chassis battery. And I don't understand why. It could be that the batteries are bad. I ended up having to put some water in them. So that was a bit low. But however, these don't seem to be holding a charge very well. House batteries are great. Chassis batteries are not so much. Anyway, so the good news is, of course, during all this time, everything else is, of course, that's out running on the road again. And we took a car on a trip to go to Virginia. About 2 hours into that trip, long story short, engine shot. Got it. That's at a Volvo dealer right now. Had over a couple hundred thousand miles on it, but it was a little premature. But however, we had just changed the transmission in it because I was having some issues and just put a used transmission in it. And I was like, well, I'm kind of into this thing now. And we didn't pay that much for that car. It was actually a very good deal for what it is. And it's not such a bad thing to put in some investment into. It's still a very good solid car, and it's a good tires, good brakes, good everything. They did a 187 point check inspection on the thing, and everything else came out really well. So it's a good solid car. And so we're gonna another 30,000 mile motor. I'm gonna put in it. Anyway, so that's being done. That's in the shop right now. It should be done, another week, probably 2 weeks. And my other car with my 320,000 mile, 330,000 mile car, whatever it was, that one also, it was time for a new engine on that one. So it's in the shop. It's been in the shop for over a month because the guy is local. He does a great job, but he's very far behind. The reason he's so far behind is because he does a great job. Everybody wants to take their stuff there. And it's a pretty big job, so they're working on that one. In the meantime, my truck, my Jeep was the only thing it's been running pretty good. It had some issues initially, but it had all that worked through. Now, I have a truck, pickup truck. This thing has been, I thought I had it all back together. Everything was working fine. Because I had some brake issues with it. I had some brake lines that were corroded out. So I changed all changed some stuff around. Got the flatbed on it, thought, okay, we've got this thing working now. Some of the issues that were happening. So out driving it around, I drove it across town and stopped and went to leave. And of course, as I was going to leave, noticed there was it looked like brake fluid or transmission fluid. I couldn't tell which one. It kind of looked like transmission fluid. All underneath the car, but it looked like it was, when I pulled in, it was raining, so I wasn't sure whether it was there or not before. I didn't think it was coming from my truck. I pulled out, drove around, went forwards and backwards. Everything seemed to be fine, working fine on the transmission, so I wasn't sure what was going on there. Took off, went home. On the way home, it was shifting kind of funny, which wasn't that unusual because I know I do have a position sensor that's out. Drive shaft position sensor. That's starting to kind of act funny. I didn't think it was that big of a deal. So I get home and I park the car. And of course I realized there's transmission fluid everywhere underneath that car. So I get looking into it. I'm thinking, it looks like it's leaking from it has a transmission oil cooler. And I thought, it looks like it's coming from there because it's coming from the front there somewhere. So I saw some stuff leaking back from there. Now, stuff blows around underneath the car when you're driving it. You never know where it's going to end up. So I got home, got the transmission cooler off. And I changed the hoses. And that wasn't it. And then I realized the transmission cooler has a crack in it. I see where some of the fins have some oil on it. It's been leaking there. So I'll get another one of those. Got that. Got the fittings. They sent me the wrong fittings. Just went on one thing after another. Finally, just redid all the hosing. Got all the hoses to the cooler. Got it all in there. Got it all done. In the meantime, I'm also changing the bumper out to an aftermarket bumper that I can put a winch on. So the I'm doing all that, and it looks much better now. But I ended up doing all that. And then it still was leaking transmission fluid. I couldn't figure out what. So I finally got my truck back. I can finally use this thing again. Because I got a bunch of stuff I want to haul around. I got a lot of cleanup I'm doing around the house here. So I need to make a couple trips to the dump. So I get all that done. It's still leaking. Can't figure out where the leak's coming from. And I get underneath there. I'm really looking really hard at where's this thing dripping from? There's a crack in the oil pan, the transmission oil pan, the transmission pan that goes underneath. There's a crack in that thing. So I order a new pan. The pan takes forever to get here. In the meantime, I'm working on some other stuff, working on the thing. I got it set aside. Basically, can't do anything with the truck now, so I got to do other things. And the truck is kind of instrumental in what I want to do with other things. And of course, I'm limited on cars now. Now the one car we do have left, the 07, it's running okay. It's got some issues. I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. I think it's a fuel issue. And it could be spark plugs and ignition coils. I don't know. It's I'm going to change all that stuff and put some stuff in it. See what it should be. It should change everything. Now, having said all that, I end up getting the pan that started taking the pan finally came in. So I'm like, okay, I'll take the old pan off. I didn't want to take it off until I knew I got the right pan. So I was draining trying to get the fluid drained out of the old pan, and ended up just decided, it was leaking. It was dripping all the time anyway. So I was like, well, just poke a hole in the bottom of that thing, get all the fluid out. So that worked. Got all the fluid out of it, and started taking the bolts out. Well, most of the bolts came out okay. And if I'd have known that there was going to be an issue, I'd have done things a little bit differently. But all the bolts came out except for four. Well, actually, it was about five. There's 15 bolts in this thing. So I took, all of them, but five of them out. Some of them stripped out. So now I'm going to need a bolt extractor, of course. So I get one, and it strips out a couple more bolts. Stripped those out even further. Some of them came out. So several of them came out. Three or four of them came out. And next thing I know, I've got, now I've got four bolts in there that I cannot get out. So I try to drill them out. Got an extractor for that. So I drill the thing. Put the extractor in, turn the thing, it cracks. And now the extractor is stuck in the hole. You can't drill those out. Those are hardened steel. They're also very brittle. But so this thing just broke. So that's done. Now, I've got one in there at least. It's going to be really difficult to get out. So I'm working on this thing like crazy, off and on. Of course, you got to get under the truck. Now, it can't really be moved because there's no transmission fluid in the thing. And it's hard to get underneath it. So I got it on a rock parking area, crushed rock parking area. This is just difficult. So it's yesterday, basically, I got all through the day, finally got the chance to start working on the thing. Went to Harbor Freight, got some more parts, got some more tools, took back the stuff that broke. They actually replaced it. The extractor that broke, they just replaced it. And I ended up getting everything, I was just, last night I was bound to turn, of course the sun was starting to set, and I was like, you know what, I don't care how long it takes, I am not going to bed until, I'm not going to stop working on this until I have something done with it. If this pan is not off tonight, it'll be morning and I'll still be working on it. But I ended up buying an air gun. I had one of these, I have a small one that I knew it wasn't going to be powerful enough. And I've had it for so long, I wasn't even sure if it's going to work. So I got this other little air hammer and I got the right adapter for it, for the right tooling for it. It's actually a pretty good one. It's one of their top line from Harbor Freight. and got that thing, got it on there, and boom, popped the. It's like, okay, so I tried everything I could to get the other nuts off without, you know, the, I kind of bought a different couple of different kinds of extractors. Nothing was working. So I ended up just saying, I'm just going to bust it off. So I ended up taking those off and just, you know, and it was there it goes. Just popped it right off. Down comes the oil pan. Very happy. Of course, now at this point, it's pitch black dark out. I got lights out there, but it's, that's done. At least it wasn't pouring down rain. That was the other issue. Every time I wanted to work on the thing, it was pouring down rain out there. So the ended up getting all that done and got the other oil pan actually on, which that was a whole other issue because it has this rubber gasket. But you don't dare get that thing out of alignment. So I had to figure out how to put little bolts in to hold the rubber gasket while I got it, held it up there, get that all in while I was aligning to put the actual real bolts in. So of course I had to only put them in certain places because there's some that I'm going to have to drill out later and put new bolts in. But I got it all in there and actually snugged it all down. Now I think this morning I'm just going to go out and double check it. Oh, I have some light out there. And I've got to go double check all the bolts, make sure they're all in there tightened up. Might even try to drill out some of those. I'm going to put oil in it and see if it leaks. So wish me well, but I think I have my truck back. So all I have to do is finish up the sideboards, and I'm going to start loading that puppy down and taking it to the dump and just dropping a bunch of junk off over there because I've got a lot of junk to get rid of. That's the plan, Stan. Anyway, that's why it is a glorious day because I have that vehicle back, I think, on the road. I think it's going to be on. I think. See how that works. I have the Jeep, of course. That's not really a long-range car, though. You don't want to take that on a two-hour drive. And I've got the, of course, the 07 Volvo. I think that this week or next week, I should be getting the 2012 back, the Volvo. And then the week after that, I should have all the vehicles back on the road, burning gas, petroleum products, creating lots of carbon for the environment. Folks, I'll see you tomorrow. Might have a live show tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. God bless. Have a great rest of your day. Thanks for listening. Take care. Call the show. See ya.